Support for Millennial is provided by Blue Apron. I don't know about you, but I like good food. The problem is, during my work week, I don't have a lot of time to make stellar dinners. But Blue Apron can solve all of my routine grocery shopping, wanting to make better food for myself during a busy work week problems. For less than $10 per person per meal, Blue Apron will deliver pre-proportioned ingredients to make wonderful meals. And you get to choose the meals you want to make. For instance, when I go online, I see that there is a steak and green peppercorn sauce meal. There's also sesame chicken with some rice, love chicken, and some Jamaican-style vegetable turnovers. What up? I think this would be a great gift for my sister. She and you can get your first three meals for free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/millennial, two L's, two N's. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Support for Millennial is provided by Squarespace. Squarespace wants to help you make your next move this year by giving you the tools you need to showcase yourself to the world. Show people what you're doing or what you want to be doing by creating a beautiful website or online store with an award-winning, easy-to-use drag-and-drop template. And if you're having trouble, not only does Squarespace have tutorial videos, but they also have 24/7 customer support. Go to squarespace.com for your free trial and enter offer code MILLENNIAL, two L's, two N's, to get 10% off your first purchase. Squarespace. Make your next move. Make your next website. Let's say you're on the beach with your family in Florida. You're sitting on one of those folding chairs getting some sun, and you're relaxing for the first time in months. When you look out over the ocean, you see this little tiny black dot. It looks like a fishing boat. When you look up again, the dot is closer. Gradually, 12 men come to focus. They're jumping off the boat and into the water and running toward the beach. They fall to their knees and start kissing the sand that's 20 feet from where you're sitting.
¡Epa! ¡Bienvenidos! ¡Bienvenidos! Yeah! You guys made it, bro! ¡Qué bien, man! USA! USA!
For the past 22 years, Cubans have been granted a special privilege. They're different from the thousands of people traveling from the rest of Latin America who cross the U.S. border without visas and are sent to detention centers and then deported. But Cubans aren't deported. The moment their feet hit U.S. soil, they have a clear path to stay here. They've grown up knowing that they have a one-way, no-questions-asked ticket to America. All they have to do is get here.
¿Cuánto tiempo llevan en esa, man?
6 días.
6 días.
On the beach, when you see people kissing the ground, it's because they just accomplished a dream that's been in the works for years. But now, the door to that dream is about to close. You're listening to Millennial, a podcast about coming of age. This is the second part of a four-part mini-series about growing up in Cuba. If you haven't listened to the first episode, I suggest you pause and start at episode 33. In this episode, we're going out into open water, a risk many Cubans are willing to take. It's Friday night in Havana. I'm with my best friend, Hannah. We're all dressed up because we have tickets to go see a dance concert. When we get out of the car, we walk towards a theater with big lights and a huge crowd. It feels like the Broadway of Havana. Except, unlike Broadway, tickets to this concert cost 10 Cuban pesos, which is about 40 cents.
Don't open the door.
are a lot of things to love about Cuba. This passion and access to the arts is definitely one of them. You can also attend a university and get your degree for free. And if you get sick and need surgery, you can go to the hospital for free. And at 2 a.m., if Hannah and I want to walk around her neighborhood, we can. And we don't feel like anyone's going to rob us because it's super safe. Basically, all of Cuba's perks are America's problems. But people still leave. In a week, a month, a year, there's a chance that some of these people who are clapping and smiling in this room will be gone. When people leave, they leave quietly. They don't tell their friends or their family. One day, they'll just disappear. Hannah and I are walking around her neighborhood, and in between these vibrant colored houses, I can see signs of a ghost town.
What is this one? So this looks like an old abandoned mansion from the 1920s.
It has a white fence.
It has a white fence. It's rusting. It's like looking at Titanic, you know, underneath the ocean after how many years. But like, if you close your eyes and make it sparkly, you can tell what it used to look like pretty easily.
For decades, Cubans have left their homes and their families in waves. The first wave happened right after Fidel came into power in the late 50s, and then again in the 60s.
The people of Cuba are living in a crisis, a special period. It's referred throughout the land as Periodo Especial.
And then, again, when Cuba's depression happened, it was the country's economic lowest low.
Between 1989 and 1993, the Cuban economy drops by about one-third.
Because Cuba's economy was so dependent on the Soviet Union, when the Soviet Union collapsed in the early 90s, Cuba collapsed.
I mean, it's very nasty not to have soap and not to have medicine and not to have enough protein.
You know, people were essentially starving, so Cubans would invent new and different ways to eat with things that are not edible.
Recipes during this time had pizzas with melted condoms on them instead of cheese and seasoned grapefruit peels so they tasted like steak. But food was scarce. People were starving and jobs were hard to find. More than 130,000 people left in the 90s. But even after the special period ended, when I talk to Hannah's friends, the desire to leave hasn't gone away. Remember Roberto, one of Hannah's friends from the last episode?
Está obsesionado con irse. Con irse para, ya sea para Estados Unidos o cualquier otro.
Roberto says he has friends who are obsessed with leaving Cuba. One of these friends thinks that if he leaves Cuba, all of his problems will go away.
I guess that what I want to say is like, what would you say to those kids?
¿Qué tú dirías a ellos?
No se debe hacer, bye.
I would tell them they shouldn't do it.
Michael was someone who actually did it. On a homemade raft, he crossed the ocean. That's up next. But first, a short break. Support for Millennial is provided by Thumbtack. Thumbtack makes it easy to find and hire skilled local professionals for anything that you need. So I have a lot of friends who are getting married this year. All at once, no pressure, right? With Thumbtack, if my friends need a wedding photographer, they can look them up, click the state that they need the photographer in, answer some questions, and bada boom, you have a list of people and you can ask for their rates and compare them. This website is also beautifully designed to make finding a professional easy, and it's free. My favorite four-letter word. Hire skilled professionals for absolutely anything at thumbtack.com today.
Okay, what?
You see what he just did with his hands? He said, like, she's pretty.
I meet Michael on my fourth day in Cuba. Hannah invites him out for breakfast, and we're laughing and joking as he shows me pictures of him salsa dancing. Michael is a very clean-looking, put-together kind of guy. He's wearing a properly tight-fitted t-shirt, and I can tell he spent some time doing his hair this morning. So it's hard for me to imagine him on a homemade boat crossing the ocean with all of Mother Nature's odds against him. But he grew up during a time where he felt like the odds were against him.
Mi padre, ingeniero industrial.
My father was an industrial engineer, and during the special period, he lost his job. So when I was 11, I started to collect bottles, and my mom would clean them. Then I would sell them to the state. I was able to make roughly $11 selling bottles for 3 years. And with $11, we were able to eat for 5 days. It was a dreadful period of time. It was really difficult.
After Cuba's special period ended, Michael, like Roberto, felt limited. He couldn't live the life he wanted to live. For instance, he wanted to make his own money, have his own business, but he couldn't.
No teníamos nada.
We had nothing. We didn't have the prospects of normal young people. And since we had nothing, we risked ourselves to find another life. One day, my friend says, "Why don't we build a boat?"
But in Cuba, you can't just build a boat. It's illegal. It's illegal to leave the country by boat. But that didn't stop Michael and six of his friends. It also hasn't stopped tens of thousands of people who have come before him and thousands more who will come after. If you're Michael, you work quietly. In a secret location, you ask your friends to collect scrap metal, tubes, a motor, wood that you can't buy in a store. For months, you all gather materials and make plans you can't say out loud. It's possible that the neighbors who live next to you are doing the same thing, but neither of you will know. When the day of his departure comes, I imagine Michael hugs his mother a little tighter than usual. She doesn't know why, and he can't tell her. If he does, he may go to jail, be blacklisted from jobs, or be seen as a traitor. Only he knows that this may be the last time he sees her. It's 90 miles between the U.S. and Cuba. If the ocean were a road, Michael would be there in an hour and a half on the freeway. But it's not. Instead, it's shark-infested, reef-ridden, and treacherous. It could be 6 days before he and his friends see land again. If they're lucky, tens of thousands of people before them were not. I imagine as they lower their boat into the water, they feel the weight of their decisions, all here, all made of scrap wood and built on faith. Unnoticed, they push out. As they get further from the lights and the noise of the city, it's possible that Michael and his six friends toast with a little bit of rum that they brought and take a bite of food that's supposed to last them a week. When he looks back to the shores, the lights and sounds of the city are fading into the distance. It could be the first time Cuba has ever felt so small.
El Golfo. Miren qué lindo está eso. No hay ni un barquito.
There's this New York Times video we found of these guys on a boat documenting their trip and basically doing exactly what Michael is doing. The video shows this blue open water. The sun is shining. It's clear. And the guy narrating is excited and energetic. He even freaks out a little when he sees dolphins alongside the boat.
Yeah.
Mira, compadre, los delfines tenemos aquí custodiándonos a nosotros. Esa es la bienvenida, hermano.
But there are these things in this video that you can't feel or see. Like how the ocean is like a desert. You're surrounded by water you can't drink. And the sun is constantly beating down on you. The guy narrating takes his camera and shows a handful of men tightly scrunched together in this handmade boat. No one is moving. The guy says his friends look like a cemetery of dead people. You can't see the sharks swimming beneath them. And the ocean doesn't tell you about all the rafts and homemade boats it's flipped over and lives it's claimed. I ask Michael, were you afraid?
Hasta el momento no. Ya vamos, una aventura.
No, not at that time. We thought of it as an adventure. After you leave, you're so focused on arriving, you don't even feel the fear anymore. It's when you're in the middle of the adventure. That's when the fear appears, in the middle of the ocean.
After 4 days at sea, Michael and six of his friends are 20 miles from the Florida coast, 20 miles from kissing the ground and starting a new life. That's when they hear a noise.
¿Y qué nos pasó? Que a 70 millas se rompen, ¿bien?
The boat broke down.
¿Qué estaba conversando con sus amigos cuando se... What were you talking about with your friends when you broke down?
No hablábamos.
No.
No, de todos nos mirábamos.
We didn't talk. We all looked at each other. I mean, what were we going to do? We had to wait.
They began to drift, their waves pushing them further from where they want to be.
The sea is very treacherous. You see it, it's calm, but then you have to live it. The ocean, it can be a traitor. It happened to me when a storm formed from thin air. 15 to 18 feet waves.
Que pensé que realmente me moría con 20 años.
I thought I was going to die at 20.
When Michael left, he didn't tell his mom or dad. Most people don't. But now, as Michael is looking over the ocean, wondering if he's going to survive, I imagine his mom is looking over this same ocean, wondering where he is.
De allá para acá hay corrientes que van trasladándote para Cuba.
Michael says because of the currents, they're slowly being pushed back to Cuba. They spend 9 days at sea. Luckily, they eventually wash up on an island and are able to fix their boat. Now they have to choose whether to move forward with their plan, to go back out to the ocean and head to the U.S., or to do something safer.
Habían tres que no querían virar para Cuba.
And there were three friends that didn't want to return to Cuba. They kept saying, doesn't matter, I'm not going back to Cuba. And I told them that I'm personally, I am going to return to Cuba.
¿Cómo cambiaron la idea de, en vez de irse para los Estados Unidos, virar para Cuba?
Hannah asks, how did you change your mind from going to the U.S. to going back to Cuba?
Porque ya estábamos más para acá, ya estábamos más pegados a Cuba.
Because we were closer to Cuba. My priority was to save myself, because I realized that I can lose my life out there, and I didn't want to think about that again.
As they approach the island that they thought they would never see again, I wonder if their dreams of leaving Cuba never felt so small.
It's illegal to leave in a boat. So when you arrive back to Cuba, you're detained because you've broken the law.
But Michael was eventually released. Since then, he's made a life for himself in Cuba. But a part of me wonders if he still dreams of going to the U.S.
¿Tú quieres ir a los Estados Unidos solo para... Pero es como... No vivir.
So you want to go to the U.S. only to...
To visit. Not to live. Only to visit.
It seems to me that he's hiding something. That he's not telling you the entire truth. He talks about not wanting to leave Cuba, and I can't understand that. I mean, I didn't want to leave Cuba either.
That's Ernesto, our translator, who's also from Cuba. When I was done with Michael's interview, I gave it to Ernesto, and he was kind of surprised that Michael didn't want to immigrate to the U.S. anymore. So was I, to be honest.
He continued to say, like, he just wants to see the U.S., but he doesn't want to stay. Those are the things that you're, like, skeptical about, too, right?
It could also be that Michael doesn't fully trust me, and he doesn't want to tell me the truth.
People got used to saying something completely different to what they were feeling and thinking because they are afraid. And a lot of them are still afraid. What if this is heard by someone in Cuba and then I get in trouble? Mm-hmm. So they will talk to you and they will tell you a lot of really good things, but then they're just going to be a little bit short of telling you the entire truth. When I was in Cuba, people, you know, foreigners would ask me about things. So I will give them like the official, you know, speech. This is great. Everything is great. We have all these freedoms and all these rights and all this free stuff. Mm-hmm. And everything's great, you know, and whatever.
And people generally feel like they're being listened to and watched all the time, right?
Yes. The walls have ears. It's something very common, and it's something that it's going to come up in conversation the entire, you know, many, many times.
Michael may still want to leave for the U.S., but if he does, he won't tell me. Instead, he'll do what other Cubans do. In secret, he'll collect the materials he needs to build a boat. He'll study the currents, the weather patterns, find some friends who want to go, and then choose a day. On that day, they'll carry their boat out to a beach, lower into the water, climb inside, and push off from the shore. And if they can make it across 90 miles of open sea and walk onto U.S. soil, they'll be welcomed as Americans.
A week before leaving office, President Obama has ended a longstanding immigration policy for Cubans. The so-called wet foot, dry foot rule had allowed Cubans who made it to the U.S. to stay in the country automatically, but effective immediately, Cubans who arrive without visas will be subject to deportation.
As of early January, about a week before we released this episode, everything has changed for Michael, for Cubans building boats in silence, and for the ones who are currently in the middle of their journey, making their way to the U.S. They'll no longer be rewarded for their 90-mile trek. Instead, they'll face deportation. People have said to me, as you grow up, you shouldn't be afraid to take risks, make mistakes, and fail. Crossing the ocean in a handmade boat in shark-infested waters seems like a crazy idea. But I can understand why the thought of it is appealing, especially when you live in a country where your life can feel so outside of your own control. I wonder if anything will change, if this new legislation will prevent Cubans from leaving, or if their dreams will continue to push them out to sea, despite all the odds against them. In the ocean, and now on the other side. Editing help for this episode was provided by Devin Taylor and Ben Severance. Justine Paradise helps with production. The voices you heard were Michael, who only wants to be identified by his first name, Hannah Cohen, our translator Ernesto Ariel Suarez, and Philip Kotoszewski. Millennial is collaborating with photographer Michael Eastman, who provided the visuals for this episode and will provide the visuals for the series. To see his photographs, go to millennialpodcast.org or eastmanimages.com. Hannah Berkeley Cohen is our liaison who is guiding us through Cuba and how it exists today. To keep tabs on Millennial, follow us on Twitter at MillennialPDCST, Facebook, and Instagram. Millennial is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, which is made possible with the support from the Knight Foundation and MailChimp. On our way out of his house, we meet Michael's mom. She never left Cuba because she's afraid of airplanes. We talk for a while. She tells me she admires my Chinese mixed look.
I'm going to breed you.
And she tells me I should have Michael's kids because together we'd make beautiful babies.
Wow, mama.
When Hannah tells her I have a boyfriend, she shrugs her shoulders and says, "Doesn't matter. You can have a boyfriend here, and you can have a boyfriend there." I've never had someone say that to me before, but in Cuba, sex is everywhere, and relationships are less defined. Next time on Millennial, we dive into navigating sexual politics in Cuba. And I'm challenged to look at relationships and sexuality in a way I never have before. I'm Megan Tan. Thanks for listening. Millennial would like to thank Squarespace for supporting this episode. This year, Squarespace wants to help you set new goals, start a business, change careers, and launch a creative project. Create a website or an online store with an easy-to-use drag-and-drop template. My mom created a website using Squarespace to showcase her watercolors. You can see it for yourself at susantanart.com. Show the world what you're doing or what you want to be doing. Go to squarespace.com for your free trial and enter offer code MILLENNIAL, 2 L's, 2 N's, to get 10% off your first purchase. Squarespace. Make your next move. Make your next website.
Radiotopia.
Thanks for listening, and thanks to AdZerk for providing their ad serving platform to Radiotopia.